गणेश जय गणेश पाहि मां। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष मां। जय गणेश जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि मां। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष मां। जय गणेश जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि मां। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष मां। जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि मां। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष मां। जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि मां। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष मां। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष मां। जय गणेश पाहि मां। श्री गणेश रक्ष मां। ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ओके, इफ यू टर्न टू पेज 49 यू विल सी द इन्वोकेशन मंत्र फॉर दिस उपनिषद। ट्राई एंड रिपीट after me. Om aapyayantu mamangani.
Om aapyayantu mamangani.
Vak pranash chakshu shrotra matho.
Vak pranash chakshu shrotra matho.
Balam indriyani cha sarvani. Sarvam Brahmaupanishadam.
Sarvam Brahmaupanishadam.
Maham Brahmanirakuryam.
Maham Brahmanirakuryam.
Mama Brahmanirakarot.
Mama Brahmanirakarot.
Anirakaranam.
Anirakaranam.
Astvanirakaranam.
Me astu
tadatmani nirate ya upanishat sudharmaha te mai santu
te mai santu
om shanti shanti shantihi. It's a prayer to the absolute reality, Lord of the universe, for my limbs, and all to be strong, for all my senses and all to be strong, so that, of course, strength is required for this path. In this path, a weak person will not reach anywhere. Strength has to be there. Na ayam atma balahinena labhyaha. It is said in other parts of the Upanishads. That the weak person, weak in any sense, will not be able to reach that goal. Strength that is so important on this path must be there. Swami Vivekananda used to drum this in everybody's mind all the time. You must be strong on this path. So here is a prayer. May all my limbs be strong, vigorous, and may I not be spurned by the reality, or may I not also spurn the reality. Is Brahman. That you can read some more on that prayer. Okay, but straight to the Upanishad. This is one of the most direct Upanishads that you will meet. In the beginning itself, there's a question, and the question is directly on Brahman. Now see, if we understand this question properly, then the answer will be very easy. Actually, that is true in general, you know. If you're asking somebody a question, so you go to ask Guruji some question or Gurudev some question. If you really think about that question long enough, think about the question well, there will really be no need to ask that question. What happens is the intellect gets some doubt, and because there's a inbuilt tamas in the intellect, and that is true for all human beings, there's an inbuilt tamas. That tamas immediately takes over, and the person feels, okay, I have to ask this question. But if the intellect can overcome that tamas and get into a thinking mode and again think about that question which he's asking, the answer will reveal itself right there. The idea is, every coin has two sides, right? You'll never find a coin with one side. You're looking at heads, tails right behind. But we get so caught up with heads, we forget tails. That is exactly what happens with the intellect. It gets so caught up with the question, the answer is right behind. But he is enamored by the question. And some people take that even a step further, and anybody they meet, they ask the same question. Because then they say, I want to hear what your response is. So they fall in love with the question. They are not concerned about the answer. But if we look very well, the answer to that question is right behind. No question comes without an answer. No head comes without a tail. And both are always together. You don't have the positive and the negative in the atom. You don't have like the positive charge here and the negative charge downtown Atlanta. The two are always there, right there. You can't have the positive pole of the magnet here and the negative pole somewhere other place. They're connected, necessarily connected. So question is necessarily connected with an answer also. And it is right there. All that is required is looking properly. You'll see that here now. You see how wonderfully this student... From the words, we cannot really say it is a student who is asking some guru. You may surmise like that. But it can also be said that the guru, for the benefit of all of us, is himself asking the question and himself answering. That also is a possibility. Like that. You don't know. We don't know. We presume the ideal situation where there's an ashram, there's a guru sitting, there are students who are there, and the student has a doubt, and so he asks the guru. Now look at the question. You try to repeat the words. This is on page 51. I don't know if you have the same edition. Same? Kene shitam patati preshitam manaha. Kena prana prathama praiti yuktaha. Kene shitam vachamimam vadanti. Chakshushrotram kaudevo yunakti.
Chakshushrotram kaudevo yunakti.
The question asked by the student is not any ordinary question. That's why I'm saying it's a possibility that the guru himself is asking. What is it? Kene shitam patati preshitam manaha. Kena means by whom? By whom? By whom does this mind pra ishitam, mind which is directed to some goal? See, your mind is running out all the time, pursuing some object. Na? The mind doesn't just go into space like that. It is always after some object. That mind is directed to some object. But by whom, by whose wish or command is this mind being directed to some object? That is meaning. We'll come back and see all of them. Kena prana prathama praiti yuktaha. By whose wish does the prana, or the pranas in this body, engage themselves in their respective functions? It means the student is intuiting some higher power by whom all of these things are functioning and working, propelled, commanded. Kena ishitam vacham imam vadanti. By whose wish or will or command does the speech function, or does it job, its job? It speaks. By whose wish? Chakshu shrotram kau devo yunakti. By which bright resplendent power does the air and the eyes and all see or function? Kena ishitam. Ishitam means, the Sanskrit root is ish, wish. Ish and wish is same, almost. By whose wish? So the student, it means that the student has studied this thing so deeply, and he realizes that there is somebody who is behind the wishing of the mind. Let us go back a little bit and see. Huh? Now see, you say that I'm wishing for something outside. I wish that I had this or I had that thing. So who is initiating the wish? Why am I initiating? I wish that I had this thing. So the individual, or if you take a simpler example, see what makes the car go. Now some people say the engine. There's an engine that makes the car go. Then there's another person says, no. Behind the engine, there is the petrol, the gas. If that gas is not there and you have engine, without gas, engine will not go. So gas makes the engine go. Well, Eddie, even if there's engine and there's gas and there's no driver. So in terms of the car going, there's engine. Then behind that, there's gas. But behind the gas also, there has to be some driver. Now, even if you have, let us say, no engine, and you have the driver, he can come out and push. He'll make it go, no? No gas also, he'll still make it go.
But if you have the engine and gas and no driver, who will make it go? They will just sit there. Isn't it?
So that in terms of the car and the engine and all that, the ultimate driver, the ultimate mover, propeller, is the driver, isn't it? Now, what he was being asked here, let us now study this driver himself, the individual being. So he has these senses working, right? The senses, they all have their centers in the mind. So we say the mind makes them work. The mind makes the senses work. So who makes the mind work? Behind, it is said, that there are all things like desires, past sanskar, prakriti, these, you know, so many things. Because your mind working and my mind working, they're all different, isn't it? So your purva sanskar, all things from the past, will make your mind work in a certain way. And my purva sanskar will make my mind work in a certain way. So we say that all purva sanskar and all things belong to prakriti really. With all the gunas and all that together. Right? So prakriti is making the mind work. And then now who is making prakriti work? There's where you get to the third factor now. So senses and mind and then prakriti. And then there's a third factor behind. That thing is called as Brahman. Now see how the student has studied this? He has studied that. No. It appears to me that behind prakriti also there is something. It means the student has studied this thing deeply. Then only the question can come. So there's mind and senses. So mind is nothing but the coordinating center for all the senses. Huh? Senses are actually tentacles of the mind. So there's senses and mind. There's prakriti. And behind prakriti, there seems to be something else. So the student wants to know that thing. It's not just prakriti. That is why he's asking, Kena. Kena means by whom do they work? That is the question. Now, I'm telling you, if you study the question well, answer becomes very easy. How? See. The student has studied it, and he has come to realize it. At the level of mind, there is so much of differences. At the level of senses, there are so many differences. Like my eyes will might be able to see better than your eyes, or your eyes might be able to see better than my eyes. So they function differently. And my mind thinks differently. My purva sanskar and how much balance of sattva, rajas, tamas, all that in my mind will be different from yours. So the prakriti also manifesting in me will be different from you. But the prime mover, the primary mover behind all of this, that thing is not different. That is just same. The same one mover behind all. The differences come only in from prakriti onwards. So that one thing he wants to know about. Who is that thing? What is that thing that makes everything in the universe move? And specifically with regard to this human being that makes him move. And he's saying, by whose wish, second thing there is, he realizes that it doesn't move by his own wish. This is also a very profound and deep question now. You know what he's touching on there? The student has also gone so deep to realize that it appears that things, this BMI is moving by my wish. But he's asking, he's understanding, no, it is not moving by my wish. So I want to know by whose wish, by whose command, by whose order is it operating? So the student has come to realize an even deeper fact. That this BMI is not functioning merely by my wish.
When the student goes deep inside to discover this, it means he has really gone deep inside. Because at the superficial level, at this level, we all feel that this BMI is working by our wish, by our command. You know, I'm making it work. But here is a very elevated student who realizes that it is not working by his own command. And here is where this big question arises in so many people's minds. What is that? Do I have freedom of choice, or is everything determined? If this thing has arisen in your mind, it means that you are now being preoccupied with more fundamental questions. You're now being preoccupied with questions that matter. Now, all the things which I have said here today, if these things are preoccupying your mind, it means that spirituality is going to, this type of spirituality of the Upanishad is going to make a big difference. We have to do a calm and sober analysis of my own present state. If this interests you, and who is that prime mover? This topic, who is that prime mover? Or do I have freedom of choice? Am I making things move? Or is there some other power behind which is making things move? If this thing captures your mind, if it grips your mind and you are concerned about this, it means that you are really set on the spiritual path. And if this thing, why this topic came up? If you're asking this type of question, why this topic came up? Of what importance it is to me? I don't think it is of any importance. If that is your response to this type of question, it means this Upanishad, better leave it. We'll come back to it later on. This question should grip your mind, you know. Really? There is something beyond? Or, you mean to say there may be something pushing my mind and pushing all the senses and, you know, making everything operate? And really, I have no control over it? That is one of the possibilities in the question. You see, there is some other greater being wishing for this thing to work in this way. So if that interests you, then you are interested in Upanishad. If it doesn't interest you, then let us go and study economics or something like that. So he said, Keneshitam, by whose wish is it working? Patati Preshitam Manaha. That this mind, Praishitam. Praishitam means the mind goes on looking for things in this world, goes on pursuing things, goes on, you know, running after things. So by whose wish does the mind do that? We usually think it's by our own wish. The students indicating, no, it might be by somebody else's wish. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, Bhagavan says at one place, very nice line you must remember. Ahankara vimurhatma karta aham iti manyate. That the person is totally deluded into thinking that he himself is the doer, the prime mover, the one who commands actions. The person is deluded into thinking that I am the doer. But the question is, oh, there might be some doer who is behind, you know. He is the real doer. He's the one who is making things move. Then we start questioning, but really, do I have freedom of choice then to make things move? So when that question now grips the mind, then you're really on this path. Huh? And that is the same question that is there for all the other, not only the mind, but all the senses and everything, prana and everything here. So it's the same question which is being asked about all of them. There's something behind it appears. Then when you start studying like that, then many other questions will arise now. But questions like, oh, so already it is pointing to something behind, which we call as Brahman God, absolute reality, whatever, right? So the question is, who is the one who is making it move? Who is wishing, commanding that it moves in a certain direction? And at other places in scriptures, it is said that Brahman or that absolute reality, he is akarta. He doesn't wish. He doesn't do. When those questions start coming up in the mind, it means you are thinking. And if you're that the Upanishad only wants you to think, that is all. The Upanishad cannot deliver Brahman to us. Nothing. Brahman cannot be delivered. Upanishad can only make us think. So if you start thinking, Brahman is the mover. There's something behind who is the mover. But it is said at other places that Brahman is akarta, abhokta. It is, you know, it doesn't have any wishes. Or if it is wishing, that is, he's karta. So those questions will come. But it should immediately come into your mind, these questions. That means you're thinking. Now see, the reply is given now by the Rishi. Who is that mover? He says, Shrotrasya Shrotram Manaso Manoyad Vachoha Vacham Saupranasya Pranaha Chakshush Chakshurati Mutya Dhiraha Chakshushash Chakshurati Mutya Dhiraha Pretyas Smal Lokat Pretyas Smal Lokat Amrita Bhavanti Shrotrasya Shrotram. He calls it the air of the air. Nice words of Upanishad, na? With no meaning. What is that? The air of the air. The air of the air? What is that? Manaso mano yat. The mind of the mind. The mind has a mind? Never mind. Vacho havacham. The speech of the speech. Wow. Pranasya prana. The prana of the prana. Eyes of the eyes and all that goes on like that, right? What it means is everything in the universe has an essence, actually. This is what you have to think first. Everything has an essence. Even if you take any worldly material thing, there is an essence behind the thing without which the thing cannot continue to exist. So, just start at this superficial level here. Sugar has an essence. Fire has essence. Suppose you remove that sweetness from the sugar. Then whatever is left, you cannot call that thing as sugar. It means that thing cannot be sugar unless that essence is there. So if you remove the essence, it is not sugar anymore. But if you go back now, sweetness also has an essence. So you can go keep trying to figure out what is the essence of this thing, and you can keep going back until you reach an ultimate essence for all things in the universe. That ultimate essence of all things will be common to all things in the universe. That ultimate essence we call as Sat Chit Ananda. Sat Chit Ananda is the ultimate essence of all things. It is that same. And let me give you an example. You know, in the classroom, the children have something called as either Play-Doh or Play-Doh. Play-Doh. That Play-Doh you give to 20 children in the classroom. So you 20 children make 20 different things. So one child makes a dog.
Another child makes a scorpion, or a snake, an elephant, a giraffe. Another child makes in a frog, a lizard. So how many different things will be made from that Play-Doh? So now, the main feature of an elephant will be strength. Scorpion will be poison. Snake also will have poison. The turtle will have some other qualities. Dogs will have some other qualities. So at one level, they will have differing qualities. But if you go a little bit deeper than that, to the ultimate level of those things, all of them have only one essence, that is Play-Doh, isn't it? So there are different levels now. At one level, they differ so much. But at a deeper level, all the differences fade away and they all have one basic essence. So here also in this universe which we are experiencing, all the different things that you see in front of you have so much of variety. But if you go at the deepest level of all of these things, they have only one essence that is indistinguishable. Because the Play-Doh in an elephant is indistinguishable from the Play-Doh in a dog. Both are the same Play-Doh. So the essence in you and me and essence in all things at the deepest level is one absolute reality. So here, the essence of the eye, the essence of the ears, the essence of all the senses which are being listed here at the deepest level is only one thing. And that thing is making the eye function. That thing is making the ears function. It is making all the pranas function. One absolute reality is making all of them function. That thing is called the eye of the eye, the air of the air. Because without that thing, the eye is just there. Like, for example, you see a corpse lying there. The eyes are there. Eyes are there in the corpse, nah. But do they see anything? They don't see. Ears are there. They don't hear anything. It means that essence, which was making them function, that essence has now gone there into dormancy. That essence is not manifesting through them anymore. So they cannot see or hear or whatever, even though they're there. You see? That essence is what is being spoken about as the eye of the eye, the air of the air. It is the most important element in that functioning of that sense organ. So all the other things remaining there, without this most essential essence, they cannot function. Like the car, the engine, the gas, and the driver. The most essential element, if you remove, the car will just sit there. Even though all the things required for its movement, they are there, the most essential one you remove, nothing happens. So that person who is the driver, he'll be called the car of the car. He is the car of the car. He's called Ahankar, yes. So, here, the most essential element is that reality, which sits behind, without which none of them will function. That is what is being spoken of as the air of the air and all such things. Now he says, Dhiraha Atimuchya Pretyasma Loka Amrita Bhavanti. Those people those wise people who rise above or give up this sense of, you know, I am the doer, I am the mover, I am the one who is responsible for all of these things functioning, and he goes beyond. See, in other words, the one who becomes this type of student, who goes beyond thinking that, see, I am the one who is making them function. And he realizes that there is something behind
which is making them function. Not only that, you know, see this thing. At this moment, I think that I am the doer, I am the mover, I am the one who is the commander in chief. If he realizes that there is something behind which is even making him think this thing, that student who moves behind and understands that even this thought that I am feeling that I am the doer, but there is still some other being which is making me feel that I am the doer. That student becomes Dhira. He is the wise student. And he attains immortality. Amrita Bhavanti. That person reaches the state of immortality. But the person who is caught up in feeling that I am the doer, I am the one who is making things work in this world, that student is always bound. Or that person is always bound in this world. We have to realize, even to think, no, I'll give you another simple example. There are many people who doubt the existence of God. You know that? They're called as atheists, Gnostic. They doubt the existence of God. But such a person only has to make a slight adjustment in his thinking, you know. I doubt the existence of God. I should remind myself that it is God who is giving me the power to doubt. I am having the power to doubt even by virtue of God's wish. Then I can doubt his existence. See how wonderful God is. God is manifesting in my mind as a denial of himself. He's manifesting in my mind as a doubt of himself only. So he manifests as a belief of himself in some people's mind, and he manifests in some people's mind as a doubt of himself. But both of them prove his existence. Because if he is not there, who will doubt and who will believe? How doubt will be possible and how belief will be possible? So when you meet a Gnostic next time, don't think that he's a bad fellow. A Gnostic, just like Astic, both of them only prove the existence of God, which is his power, which is manifesting as Gnostic and Astic. That is why the rishis always tell, you know, leave everybody in this world. Everybody's path is just as valid as your path. The Gnostic's path is as valid as your path. Your path, whichever path you have taken, marga, his is just as valid as yours. Just leave him alone. Because his denial is also affirmation of God's existence. And your affirmation is also affirmation of God's existence. There's no difference really. What happens when you see that person denying God? You get caught up with the denial of the reality, not realizing that his denial is actually an affirmation. Is it that there's some power which is making him deny? So here, the person who realizes this, he relinquishes all this feeling that I am the one who is making things move. I am the prime mover. And comes to realize that I am not the prime mover. There is some higher mover, something behind. And that person reaches the state of immortality. Amrita Bhavanti said, such people become immortal. Then, one more thing. See. Okay. There is something behind which is making all things move. So can I know that thing? This is where spirituality becomes very serious now. Can I know that thing? Can I understand that thing? Can I reach that thing? I want to know it. The Upanishad says no. You cannot know it. Then what am I doing in this class? I should not have come here in the first place. Why? I thought I could know God. I could reach God. I could understand God. And then first class I discover I cannot We'll see just now why we cannot. What's the Upanishad's response? Here it says. Natatra chakshur gacchati. Navak gacchati. No manaha. Navid maha. Navijani maha. Yathaitadanushishyat. Anya devatad viditad atho. Aviditadati. Iti shushruma. Purvesham. Yenastad. Vyachachakshire. Now let's go back over that again. The eyes see this. The mind or an intellect see the eye. And the absolute reality or Brahman see the mind and intellect. But who sees the absolute reality? From a logical point of view, it can only be intuited. It cannot be seen. What is the meaning of intuited? See this thing. If you come home and you find that your dinner table is already arranged, right? Means the utensils, plates, cutlery, everything, they're all set out there. Already arranged. Food is on the table, right? Napkins and everything are set in place. Well, you did not see who put it there, but certainly they could not have come there all by themselves, isn't it? You know that there was somebody who put them there. You did not see, and you are not seeing now also who put them. But because of prior experience and your ability to think, you are able to conclude logically that there is somebody who has arranged. See, that in the animal kingdom cannot do that. I'll give you another example. See, you know, bus number 10 leaves this place and goes to downtown Atlanta. Non-stop. So if you see Mr. X getting on the bus here in this town, well, you can conclude that he is going to downtown Atlanta, isn't it? It's a logical conclusion. Now, your dog cannot do that. An animal cannot do that. If he sees Mr. X getting on the bus, he cannot make the second, you know, deduction that, oh, Mr. X is going to. But he doesn't know. The human being has the ability to do that. In the very same way, if you see the table fixed, you know that there is somebody. Now, you may go on thinking, maybe your possibilities also will be limited. Who has access to this house? Who knows that I'm coming for dinner? This you can perhaps figure out. You see? In the very same way, if mind, intellect, and all of them, they are functioning, we know that there has to be somebody behind who is making them function. Like that. This type of deduction has to be made. That is called as intuition. But in the very same way I did not see the person who set the table, in the very same way I cannot see this one who is making mind and intellect function. Another way to understand this also is like this. Mind and intellect are functioning, and there's somebody behind who is making them function. But if mind and intellect turns to try to figure out who is that one, what happens? That one goes always behind when they turn. So suppose I turn, let us say we are looking out this way. So then I turn to look the other way. The one, yes, goes behind now. That is like the dog trying to catch its own tail. Now, will it be able to catch its tail? He doesn't realize that when he turns to catch his tail goes behind. That, or you take out, you know, the flashlight is flashing this way. The batteries are behind. The batteries are here. It's flashing this way. So the flashlight cannot flash on its own batteries. So let us say we take out the batteries and we put it behind, in front of the flashlight to see, to flash on the flashlight. Now there's no power to. It can never turn on its source. That is the idea. Its power source. It cannot turn there. That is why the Upanishad says, Natatra Chakshur Gachati. The eyes really cannot see that thing which is making it see. Or simple, so many countless examples. Your hand cannot hold your hand. See, your hand can hold this hand. But this hand cannot hold itself. The power to hold is behind and can hold something ahead, something in front, but it cannot hold itself. It is an amazing thing, you know. You know, not only that, the eyes cannot see that which is making it see. Huh? Let me tell you something, the eyes cannot even see itself. Do you know, you will live your whole life, 80 years, 90 years, and you would have never seen your eyes? Or you would have never seen your face also. Think. You live 80 years and you never... Everybody in the whole world has seen your face except you. Or your eyes. Amazing construction of this universe. What an amazing way the Lord has made this universe. That I lived 80 or 90 years and I have never seen my eyes or my face. While the whole world has seen it. People say, no, I've seen my face in mirror. And you're seeing a reflection of your face. A reflection of your eyes. Huh? Some people say, I'll take out this eye and see it with this eye. We are talking about this eye should see this eye. It can't. So this is a fact about the way the universe is constructed. Nothing can see itself. That is a fact also of reality, Brahman. Brahman cannot see itself. So what it does, Brahman's nature is to manifest itself in this variety, then only it can see itself. So when I see you, or you see me, that time Brahman is seeing itself. Only when it has bifurcated itself, or it has split itself into so many countless parts, then only it is able to see itself. Otherwise, if it remains as a uniform thing, it cannot see itself. As a uniform thing, it is called as akarta, abhokta, and all that. But when it means non-doer, non-enjoyer, and all. When it manifests as this, which you are seeing here, then only now it becomes bhokta, karta, seer, doer, witness, this, that. This is an amazing feature of Brahman. So, when it says the eyes cannot go there, it what it is actually telling is at the deepest level, when all of this is dissolved, when all of these things which you are seeing in front of you is dissolved, and you go to the level of the one absolute reality of this universe, there are no eyes, there are no ears, there are nothing. So there are no seeing. There's no talking, there's nothing there. Very deep level of Vedanta. It says, Natatra Chakshur Gachati, the eyes cannot go there. It means when I go deeper and deeper inside, I have to leave eyes and leave ears and leave everything out. And when I go there, there's no eyes, no ears, nothing. There's just pure being. There's pure existence only. I cannot take my eyes and go there. You know, like when sometimes you go to the embassy, the American embassy, you cannot go with your cell phone. You have to leave your cell phone outside. If you're traveling in some other parts of the world, you leave your cell phone outside. So if you're going in towards Brahman, you have to leave your eyes, leave your ears, you have to leave your mind. So when you go inside, you're without ears, eyes, mind. You cannot take my eyes inside. Say, I want to take my eyes inside so I will see what color Brahman is. You can't say that. Because Brahman is colorless. And one of the requirements of going inside is that you have to leave all these things outside. Natatra chakshur gacchati. The eyes do not go there. Other simpler meaning of this is the eyes cannot see Brahman. That is actually the first meaning that you will get. The eyes cannot see Brahman. What the eyes can see? A manifestation of Brahman. But manifestation is not the nature of the thing. I'll give you another example for you to think about. In the movie theater in the old days, they used to have a big projector here, you know. Or, like you're the audience, there's a big projector behind you, and it is to project on the screen here. Now I think they're all just gone now. All those type of things are gone nowadays. They have different setup. But that projector used to just beam some white light onto that screen. And in front of the white light, a film used to pass like this. So, when it comes on the screen, what are you seeing on the screen? You will be witnessing on the screen that Amitabh Bachchan is there. And that Gabbar Singh comes out. And there's some big fight is going on between Amitabh Bachchan and Gabbar Singh. And Gabbar Singh takes out a gun and shoots that Amitabh Bachchan. And everybody in movie theater is crying. Oh, Amitabh Bachchan died. Now, that is because everybody in the movie theater only became deluded by the play of white light. Because on the screen, what is there? Only play of white light in all its colors. White light has 7 colors, no? So the white light fell on the screen and got split into the 7 colors, and all things were going on the screen. And instead of you being caught up with the white light, you got caught up with the 7 colors, which it manifested as. And that 7 colors now made you cry in the movie. Oh, Bechara mar gaya. But if you could just go back behind the white light and behind the 7 colors and see that they have only manifested from this white light, with pure, uniform white light. And what you saw on the screen was just play of that. Then there'll be no crying. If you go back to white light, there's no need for eyes also, isn't it? Because white light has, it's all one uniform thing. So here also, the eyes really could only see or function when that reality which is uniform has dissected itself and manifested itself into all of this variety. But if you go behind the variety, the eyes really cannot see anything. So natatra chakshur gacchati. The eyes really cannot go there to see anything. As a matter of fact, look, it is that reality which has manifested itself as eyes also. So if you go behind to find out the reality, you have to transcend eyes as well, because eyes is part of the manifestation. So natatra chakshur gacchati, na vak gacchati, the speech cannot also speak of it, because I mean, there are so many ways we can go on reflecting on this. Huh? I'll in the next class, I will tell you about this vak. Why the speech cannot speak of this reality. The speech cannot capture the reality. We'll see that in our next class. Navak, natatrat, navak, gachati, no manaha. Okay, now, I was telling you in one of the, in yesterday's class, in the evening, these ideas which are given in the Upanishad are ideas for you to reflect on over and over and over. You have to be thinking over and over on them. And their implications are so vast. If you do not catch them, or if they do not interest you, that doesn't mean also that you should leave them. You do not catch it, and they're not interesting you, you go again over and over. Abhyasena tukanti. Again, practice, read, study, think, reflect, again over and over. And eventually they will become clearer and clearer. Okay, we'll see. In our next class will be at 10. 10 o'clock. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha.